I'm Jess Casavetto, executive producer of the hit Netflix documentary series, Dancing for the Devil, the 7M TikTok cult.
And I'm Clea Gray, former member of 7M Films and Shekinah Church.
And we're the host of the new podcast, Forgive Me For I Have Followed. Together, we'll be diving even deeper into the unbelievable stories behind 7M Films and Shekinah Church.
Listen to Forgive Me For I Have Followed on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
For decades, the mafia had New York City in a stranglehold, with law enforcement seemingly powerless to intervene.
It uses terror to extort people.
But the murder of Carmine Galante marked the beginning of the end.
It sent the message that we can prosecute these people.
Listen to Law & Order Criminal Justice System on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Gianna Prudenti.
And I'm Jamaica Jackson Gadsden. We're the hosts of Let's Talk Offline from LinkedIn News and iHeart Podcasts.
There's a lot to figure out when you're just starting your career. That's where we come in.
Think of us as your work besties you can turn to for advice.
And if we don't know the answer, we bring in people who do, like negotiation expert Maury Tahiri-Poor.
If you start thinking about negotiations as just a conversation, then I think it sort of eases us a little bit.
Listen to Let's Talk Offline on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On November 2nd, 1974, a Baltimore General Store delivery man claimed that he was robbed by three armed men. When he and his co-workers returned to the scene, they saw the three alleged assailants drive off and reported the license plate number to police. But when the car was pulled over, only two men were arrested. Despite the protestations of his co-workers, the delivery driver later identified a regular at the general store, 17-year-old Leslie Bass, as the third assailant. But this is wrongful conviction.
Wrongful conviction has always given voice to innocent people in prison, and now we're expanding that voice to you. Call us at 833-207-4666 and tell us how these stories make you feel and what you've done to help the cause, even if it's something as simple as telling a friend or sharing on social media. And you might just hear yourself in a future episode. Call us, 833-207-4666. Welcome back to Wrongful Conviction, where we've got, I believe, the first wrongful conviction ever recognized by the state of Maryland. And it appears that at least some folks still have a problem with wiping the slate clean once and for all. But before we get into all that, let's introduce the man himself, Leslie Bass. Leslie, thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you for allowing me.
It's an honor to have you here with us. So let's go back and start from the beginning.
I was born September 7th, 1957, in the South Baltimore area. My mom, she moved up here to Maryland from Henderson, North Carolina. I never knew anything about a personal relationship with my father, whom I had never met at that time. At the age of 2 years old, my moms had allowed my godmother, Shirley Ray, to take me and move to Brooklyn, New York. Up in Bed-Stuy, Brevoy Projects. Bed-Stuy, do or die. I still remember that. All right. And I grew up there, attending school there. And in the summertime, I would come back here in Baltimore. That went on for a period of time. When I was 15, I had actually come back to Maryland to actually live with my mom. I moved into the projects. But my weekends were spent at my grandfather's house in the South Baltimore area. So then we went forth to me playing basketball. I really became sincere about it when I was in junior high school. When the weather was bad, I was on the court, right? When the weather was good, I was on the court because I made a promise to myself. I wanted to excel Earl the Pearl, Walt Frazier, Wes Unseld, and all them. That's the era I grew up in, and that was my dream and aspirations to really become the best.
The year that Leslie was arrested, he had won the citywide championship, and his skill gave him notoriety, including at the neighborhood social hub that became part of a robbery investigation, the Westport Pharmacy.
They was the only store in that community. Had a deli back in the back where people go sit down with stools and stuff and eat and drink sodas and all that kind of stuff. That's how this place was. I come in that store regularly. I remember going in the back of the store and speaking to the delivery drivers that I knew, Clarence McCleary and Willie Adams. Mr. Clarence was like, Leslie, how many points are you going to give him this week? I'm saying, I don't know, about 30 points, right? Laughing and joking.
In addition to Clarence McCleary and Willie Adams, another man, Joseph Chester, did deliveries on the weekends when Leslie was usually at his grandfather's house in another neighborhood. And on one particular Saturday, November 2nd, 1974, Joseph Chester claimed to have been robbed.
I think it was supposed to have been around 7 or something in the evening. There was a call put into the Westport Pharmacy for some kind of alcoholic beverages that they wanted delivered at 2707 Spelman Road on the second floor or something, right? The delivery driver supposedly said that when he pulled up, he observed three men just lounging around outside. He said he went up the steps to the second floor and said that whoever the lady was to answer the door said that she didn't call for a delivery. Said he turned around and come back downstairs. As he coming by the guys, one of the guys stepped out and told him to put his hands up. He said the other guy put a gun to his head. He said the other guy stood on the side and didn't say anything or do anything. Then the guy that was supposed to be me with the shortcut haircut took the money out of his pocket and told him to get in his vehicle and drive off. He said he went down to the gas station and called the robbery in. Then he called the Westport Pharmacy to let them know that he had been robbed. Then Mr. Clarence and them, they met him over there and they sat outside of the building in Mr. Clarence's car and they waited and they watched three men who the victim identified as being the people who robbed him come out the building and get into this yellow Volkswagen. They followed it and used the phone to notify the police and gave them the tag number. From the reports, it shows that the vehicle was stopped. Two of these men were at the Baltimore City drug program called Cash. They came home on the weekend, committed the robbery, and were actually going back to the jail.
At the time of his trial, Leslie was unaware of this police report, and for some reason, the report only documented these two of the three men, Joseph Lewis White and Claude Knight.
One man pled guilty, got 5 years probation. The other one was found guilty and given a 5-year consecutive sentence to whatever sentence he was serving for another charge. But it's three of y'all that's supposed to be in his vehicle.
Leslie discovered the third man's identity, unfortunately, much later. So three men were in the yellow Volkswagen that night. None of them were Leslie. And only two of them were held accountable. And it appears that the alleged victim in this case, who had already ID'd the third assailant in front of his coworkers, may have used that third suspect role to his own ends on February 15th, 1975.
My mom's woke me up on a Saturday, told me, Leslie, I want you to go to the store, get me a paper. I called a friend of mine, Harrison, that lived down the street from me, like a couple doors down, asked him, did he want to walk over? And we see the fellow who owns the place called Doc. And I'm saying, Doc, you got any papers? He said, go out front. They had a paper dispenser chained to the pole. So I went out there and got the paper. As I turn around, I hear someone say, you with the leather coat on, go stand up against the wall. I turn around and look, and it's a police officer with his gun pointed at us. I'm like, who, me? He said, yeah. Now, I'm a 17-year-old kid that ain't never been arrested. This man put his gun to the back of my head and told me to face that wall. I hear him saying something to somebody, and I heard a voice say, it looks like him. And he said, well, you're under arrest for armed robbery. I said, armed robbery? I said, sir, I just came out the store. I asked Doc. I said, Mr. Clarence, them say me come. I ain't robbed no store. He said, shut up. You're under arrest. Tell it to the judge. Now, I was under the impression that the robbery happened the day that I was being arrested.
And that confusion may have been cleared up if they held a hearing to bound his case over from juvenile court, but they just granted 17-year-old Leslie bail, released him to his mother, and instructed him to have no contact at all with the Westport Pharmacy as he waited to be tried as an adult.
My mom, she entrusted my safety and well-being to an attorney by the name of Robert Paul Conrad. I'll never forget that name. When I went to see him the first time, the only thing he said to me was, "Did your mother send me an envelope?" I said, "Sir," I said, "well, what about this case that these people talk about? I robbed a drugstore." I said, "I know doctor. Don't worry about that. Let me deal with that. I know how what I'm doing. I'm the lawyer." He never gave me any information about the case whatsoever,
including the date of the robbery, the details from the police report, the identity of his two co-defendants, Joe Lewis White and Claude Knight, how Joseph Chester had ID'd the three assailants in front of the other delivery men, as well as how the third man's description simply didn't match Leslie. He was older, with short-cropped hair. Nothing was shared that would have helped Leslie develop an alibi defense for trial on July 2nd, 1975.
And I remember I'm standing in the hallway, and I see Clarence McCleary and Willie Adams, the two drivers for the Westport Pharmacy. And they're talking to a white guy with a suit on, who I find out was the state's attorney in the case against me. All right. Now, when they see me, they look around and they said, "Boy, what are you doing in here?" I said, "They locked me up and said I robbed the store." And the guy was still standing there, and they turned around and looked at him. He said, "This kid wasn't the people that we seen in the car that robbed that man." And I'm hearing this, but I don't understand none of it, because I don't know the essence of the story. So I remember the man said to them, "Y'all going to be dismissed as witnesses." So he was like, "Leslie, something is wrong here. Who is your attorney?" As I'm saying it, he's coming up the steps. Him and the white guy, they start talking. Then he comes back over to me, and I said, "Sir," he said, "I don't want to hear none of that." He said, "I told you don't talk to anybody." You know, it's a lot of other things I learned about that attorney after I was convicted, right? Come to find out, the judge that my case was before was a well-known racist.
Leslie's hired attorney, Robert Conrad, advised him, a 17-year-old kid, to take a bench trial in front of Judge James Perrott, while keeping him completely in the dark about the evidence, including the star witness.
They call the case, then they say the victim, Joseph Frederick Chester. I'm like, "Who is that?" And the lawyer turns to me and say, "That's the victim. You never seen the man that you were charged with robbing?" I said, "That man had me put my face through the wall. I never turned around." I said, "I ain't never seen that man a day in my life." But he was in the hallway watching me when I was walking around with Mr. Clarence and them came in, and Mr. Clarence and them went to him and told him, "You're wrong. He wasn't one of the people that was in that car that night."
Nevertheless, something had convinced Joseph Chester to again identify Leslie as the third assailant.
The victim testified that he was robbed by three men and that I'm supposed to have been the man that removed the money from his pocket. Another dude supposed to held a gun to his head, and the other guy just stood on the side. But all three of us supposed to have been accomplices. I said, "Well, where are they at? Because I don't know them." They asked, "Do you know a fellow by the name of Joe Lewis?" You talking about the boxer? "No, it's a fellow named Joe Lewis that was with you when you committed." I said, "I don't know anyone named Joe Lewis, and I didn't commit this robbery," right? My testimony was consistent to what I knew that had happened up February 15, 1975. I'm finding out that the robbery happened in November. The state's attorney asked me, "Where were you November the 2nd, 1974? I said, "I can't specifically say." I said, "If it was a weekend, then I probably was at my grandfather's house."
Then Leslie's attorney, Robert Conrad, didn't call Mr. McCleary or Mr. Adams to impeach the state's only witness, leaving it all up to this judge.
The judge stated that he believed him over me. And I looked at the attorney. He laughed. He looked at me and laughed, man, like the fuck it was funny. You understand? And I was tripped out, and I was like, "You did this, man. You know that I didn't have nothing to do with this." And he was like, "Nigga, you're going to serve this 20 years.
You're listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early and ad-free by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts.
I'm Jess Casavetto, executive producer of the hit Netflix documentary series Dancing for the Devil, the 7M TikTok cult.
And I'm Clea Gray, former member of 7M Films and Shekinah Church.
And we're the host of the new podcast, Forgive Me for I Have Followed. Together, we'll be diving even deeper into the unbelievable stories behind 7M Films and LA-based Shekinah Church, an alleged cult that has impacted members for over two decades.
Jessica and I will delve into the hidden truths between high control groups and interview dancers, church members, and others whose lives and careers have been impacted, just like mine.
Through powerful, in-depth interviews with former members and new, chilling firsthand accounts, the series will illuminate untold and extremely necessary perspectives. Forgive Me for I Have Followed will be more than an exploration. It's a vital revelation aimed at ensuring these types of abuses never happen again.
Listen to Forgive Me for I Have Followed on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
For decades, the mafia had New York City in a stranglehold, with law enforcement seemingly powerless to intervene.
It uses terror to extort people.
But the murder of Carmine Galante marked the beginning of the end, sparking a chain of events that would ultimately dismantle the most powerful crime organization in American history.
It sent the message to them that we can prosecute these people.
Discover how a group of young prosecutors took on the mafia and, with the help of law enforcement, brought down its most powerful figures.
These bosses on the commission had no idea what was coming their way from the federal government.
From Wolf Entertainment and iHeart Podcasts, this is Law and Order Criminal Justice System. Listen to Law and Order Criminal Justice System on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. I am Lacey Lamar.
And I'm Amber Ruffin, a better Lacey Lamar.
Boo.
Okay, everybody, we have exciting news to share. We're back with season two of the Amber and Lacey, Lacey and Amber show on Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network. You thought you had fun last season? Well, you were right. And you should tune in today for new fun segments like Sister Court and listening to Lacey's steamy DMs.
We've got new and exciting guests like Michael Beach, that's my husband, Daphne Spring, Daniel Thrasher, Peppermint, Morgan J, and more. You gotta watch us.
No, you mean you have to listen to us. I mean, you can still watch us, but you gotta listen. Like, if you're watching us, you have to tell us. Like, if you're out the window, you have to say, hey, I'm watching you outside of the window. Just, you know what? Listen to the Amber and Lacey, Lacey and Amber show on Will Ferrell's Big Money Players Network on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You locked me up at the age of 17. I'm in a maximum security Maryland State Penitentiary where people getting killed in the dining hall. You understand? People stabbing each other, niggas raping other boys and all that kind of stuff. While I'm in there, death row is directly above me. The guys on death row, when the article came out about 17-year-old basketball star received 20-year sentence, they must have followed sports when I was out in the street. Because when I come into penitentiary, guys on death row taught me how to file for the Freedom of Information Act. I don't know this guy that I've been mistaken for, who he is. I don't know nothing about the people I was charged with being co-defendants to. And I stayed up at night, man. My glasses is thick, all right? I stayed up at night reading constantly of what I need to understand about the process regarding armed robbery, what it consisted of, the essence, the elements, and all that. And I became very adept with what I was doing to the point I was helping other individuals get out, get their sentence reduced and all.
To call Leslie's main issue an ineffective assistance of counsel claim is an insult, frankly, to shitty lawyers. It appears that Bob Conrad actually helped this judge convict Leslie.
Everybody claimed he was such a good attorney, but he was only good for those that he wanted to work for. When it comes to people of color, he made it clear how he felt about them. This man was a well-known racist individual But when I filed complaint against him with the Attorney Grievance Commission, the Grievance Commission chairman sent me a letter back saying, Bob Conrad has been a dear friend to me for years, and I do not believe you. He's an honorary member of this bar commission. I'm saying, well, if that's the case, then you need the outside. This is somebody else to investigate, because this is an ethical issue here for you. How can you investigate yourself?
So there was no movement on the grievance or on his initial appeals, but those FOIA requests turned up the police reports, which eventually led to the other co-defendants. This was the first time Leslie even knew about Mr. McCleary and Mr. Adams staking out the apartment building with Mr. Chester. This is when it finally made sense that they were witnesses to these three men who had gotten into the yellow Volkswagen that night.
But what gets me is that when the vehicle is stopped, they lock up two people. They don't say nothing about this third dude. Then I start hearing, because of me being a basketball player, being young, people who used to live in that community that were in prison with me would say, man, Joe Lewis got a buddy, Bucky Nutt. And Joe and Bucky Nutt are rap buddies. They was on charges together, right? A guy came to me in the Maryland House Correction and Jessup. He said, my half-brother, Bucky, is the one them people mistake you for. So he started telling me about the robbery, the girl that lived in the apartment, and them being outside the apartment waiting for the guy to come to make the delivery. Then he says, Bucky and them, they had been doing this before. From what I was getting was the possibility that they were pretending that they were robbing people. And they probably took the delivery driver's money from him and they beat him out of it.
It appears that not only was Joseph Chester potentially involved with his alleged assailants, but also something else made him both a disgusting human being and especially vulnerable to police coercion.
Come to find out, he liked young girls. And one of the young girls that he really liked was a girl that my mother was friends with her mother. My mother said that she was in that lady's house playing cards on the weekend when the victim came in to make deliveries, and they got into a confrontation. She told the lady, she said, this is the man that said Leslie robbed him. And she was like, well, he messed with my daughter, Dina. My mother said, Dina younger than Leslie.
It appears there were multiple angles by which Joseph Chester's identification of Leslie could have been engineered, while Bucky Nutt, a.k.a. Charles Parker, was the actual third assailant. So, while Leslie continued his fight, he was offered a work release program and a pathway to parole in 1982.
They take me to pre-release. It's in Baltimore City. They give me a push broom, and they tell me to sweep from this corner all the way down there to that corner, right? And I said, the officer going to be with me? No, Leslie, you in pre-release. You ain't got to worry about that no more. I couldn't wait till the morning came. I got on the phone. I made a couple phone calls to some people that I knew. I needed a bus ticket for New York. You understand? It was about 8:30 in the morning when they gave me that broom. They said they checked out there at 12 o'clock. They didn't see me. They found the broom down there leaning up against the wall, right? And I was gone.
So Leslie escaped. But before boarding a bus to New York, he made a stop in Baltimore.
I went to where the fellow Joe Lewis' sister lived at. And I explained to her that I was the kid that had gotten locked up for Bucky Nutt, right? And she explained to me that Bucky was working with the police. She said, that's why they never locked him up. This woman sat and explained some stuff to me. I said to myself, I don't know if I can believe everything this woman's saying, but everything she said to me proved factually because I checked everything.
After a 6-month stint of freedom in New York, he was discovered when he returned to visit family in Baltimore for the holidays.
I notified the state about the identification, the problem and all. They take a year and a half to send somebody out to the victim, and he positively identifies Bucky Nutt, right? Saying that the man on the picture even still had the same shirt on that he had on when they committed the robbery. So there's a new state's attorney in Baltimore that's just been elected. And Everybody had high hopes that this man was an African-American man and he would be more understanding of the racial issues that was faced with us all these years and all that. His name was Kurt Smoltz, right? I wrote him from the Maryland House Correction asking him to please take a look at my case. He wrote me back, no. When the victim positively identified the photograph, then they contacted me and said they would be willing to release me if I accepted a deal to plead nolo contendi to one count in exchange for just being released. I said, man, I'm not taking no deal, man. Took them another year and a half for me to get out.
Kurt Schmoke not only became the mayor of Baltimore, but then also the dean of Howard University Law School, followed by the president of the University of Baltimore and a part owner of the Baltimore Orioles. It's hard to square all of that with Leslie's experience. But nevertheless, Leslie was released.
I got released October the 17th, 1984. And before I even had the hearing, I had written to the judge and told them about the deal that they tried to force me to accept. And they told me that the judge and Smoltz was best friends and they were fraternity brothers. And if I didn't accept the deal, he was going to have the judge dismiss my petition based on the original in-court identification that was made by the victim. Then he threatened the victim and told him, if you don't say it was Leslie, we're going to charge you with perjury from your original in-court identification.
I'm Jess Acevedo, executive producer of the hit Netflix documentary series, Dancing for the Devil, the 7M TikTok cult.
And I'm Clea Gray, former member of 7M Films and Shekinah Church.
And we're the host of the new podcast, Forgive Me For I Have Followed. Together, we'll be diving even deeper into the unbelievable stories behind 7M Films and LA-based Shekinah Church, an alleged cult that has impacted members for over two decades.
Jessica and I will delve into the hidden truths between high control groups and interview dancers, church members, and others whose lives and careers have been impacted, just like mine.
Through powerful, in-depth interviews with former members and new, chilling firsthand accounts, the series will illuminate untold and extremely necessary perspectives. Forgive Me For I Have Followed will be more than an exploration. It's a vital revelation aimed at ensuring these types of abuses never happen again.
Listen to Forgive Me For I Have Followed on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
For decades, the mafia had New York City in a stranglehold, with law enforcement seemingly powerless to intervene.
It uses terror to extort people.
But the murder of Carmine Galante marked the beginning of the end, sparking a chain of events that would ultimately dismantle the most powerful crime organization in American history.
It sent the message to them that we can prosecute these people.
Discover how a group of young prosecutors took on the mafia and, with the help of law enforcement, brought down its most powerful figures.
These bosses on the commission had no idea what was coming their way from the federal government.
From Wolf Entertainment and iHeart Podcasts, this is Law & Order Criminal Justice System. Listen to Law & Order Criminal Justice System on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In a galaxy far, far away.
No, babe, that's Taken. We're in our own world, remember?
Right. In our own world, we're two space cadets.
And totally normal humans.
Sure, totally normal humans.
Embark on a journey across the stars, discovering the wonders of the universe one episode at a time.
We'll talk about life, love, laughter, and why you should never argue with your co-pilot.
Especially when she's always right.
Right. And if we hit turbulence, just blame it on Mercury retrograde.
Or Emily's questionable space piloting skills.
Hey, join us on In Our Own World for cosmic conversations, stellar laughs,
and super corny dad jokes.
Listen to In Our Own World as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't worry, we promise to avoid any black holes.
Most of the time.
Wow. While in prison, I had been earning credits and all towards my bachelor's. First, I got my bachelor's degree in sociology from Towson State University. I then got my certification as a paralegal. Right? Now, in 1986, I got a full unconditional pardon from Governor Harry Hughes. I got a court order that all records relating to that conviction were supposed to have been destroyed. That was the first expungement order. That was May of 1986. The clerk of the court, when I tried to have them enforce it, he told me that he think the judge made a mistake and he wasn't putting the order through. So it sat dormant in their office. Everybody I went to get help in regards to it would never help me.
And it appears that this one clerk's inaction has repeatedly reared its ugly head multiple times throughout Leslie's life. But for now, there were other fights to win.
You have to remember, during that time, they didn't believe that wrongful convictions happened. I petitioned the state for compensation. I had no attorney. I did interviews with the news media about what was going on and how I had been fighting with the state. I was able to get an agreement with the state that with the compensation, I suppose it got assistance with housing, education, employment. The only thing that they actually did was give me the monthly payments. I was paid $250,000 over 7 years by monthly checks. When I first got the first payment, I purchased a 1987 Toyota Cressida. And I was going to my mom's house, and it's a store that sits there. I come back out the store, and it's a guy propped up on the front of my car. I'm like, ain't no chair, yo. You got that twisted. He said, I'm Bucky Nut. And I was like, seriously, y'all? I said, let me say something to you. As long as your butthole points to the ground, don't you ever approach me. Don't you ever say nothing to me. Ever. And he was like, yo, I ain't mean no harm, man. I was just introduced. I said, I don't want to hear that shit about you introducing yourself to me. Don't you ever approach me.
Leslie continued to try to put his wrongful conviction behind him. Things went well for a while. He worked for several different state agencies while receiving his monthly check, while pursuing his record expungement. And in 1998, he believed he had finally been successful. Over those years, he also got married to a woman named Donna, which unfortunately brought him nothing but more heartache.
After we got married, Donna had all kind of substance abuse problems. I tried to have her enrolled in different programs. She would disappear. I wouldn't see her for months at a time. Come to find out, her ex-husband before me, she would go back to him, and he would beat and bang on her. Then he would write up a report and submit it to the police for her, right? She supposedly had made an accusation that she was stabbed by me, that I supposedly had pulled up on her and forced her to get into my vehicle, and I tried to kidnap her. He would write up a report. They would take a charge out on me, and then she wouldn't come to court.
And things went on this way, unbeknownst to Leslie, until 2004.
In 2004, I was working for the Maryland Department of Labor, License, and Regulation as an employment specialist, and I was doing extremely well. My first child was born in 88, and at that time, I had custody of 4 children. I'll never forget, I went to work that morning. The security officer told me that they did what they call a random check of my name. They said it's a warrant for your arrest and the systems. So I'm like, yeah, right. I'm laughing because I know he got to be joking. He ain't talking about Leslie Vance got no warrant.
It wasn't a joke. The charge was first-degree attempted murder.
And I voluntarily surrendered myself and went in there. And people walked me in there. I got before the court commissioner. She asked me, have you ever been convicted of a felony, Mr. Bass? And I said, no, because I haven't. The wrongful armed robbery conviction, but not show up. I got paperwork from the attorney general from the state of Maryland in 1998 said that he got it expunged, right? Which was the 4th expungement order. Turned the computer screen around and told me, Mr. Bass, I'm sorry, but I can't release you on bail because this 1975 armed robbery is still on the records. And I pulled out the expungement order, the order from the circuit court saying that everything was done, the certificate of compliance, all of it. She said, Mr. Vass, I understand. She said, I'm familiar with your case. I'm so sorry that I'm the one that has to do this. She said, but because of the charge being what it is, a first-degree attempted murder charge, we cannot release you on bail because you have this armed robbery. I contact the attorney general from the jail, the same one that supposedly did the expungement in 98. He actually represents public safety and correctional services here in the state of Maryland, which is the agency that disseminates all criminal histories. He tell me, oh, no, Leslie, that's not correct. We're going to get that taken care of and then get you released and all this stuff. Okay. He never accepted another call from me from the jail.
Leslie awaited trial in jail for 18 months, and with no one to care for his four minor children, they were placed in foster care. Luckily, he was able to beat the charges, but the 1975 wrongful conviction continued to wreak havoc in his life.
After the acquittal, they opposed returning my children to me. And took me 2.5 years to get them back because they claimed I was a habitual criminal. And I'm saying, how can you use the same criminal history that you know was a wrongful conviction to claim that I'm a habitual criminal? No matter where I go at and what I do, I've left Maryland, moved all the way to Tampa, Florida, Fayetteville, Georgia. I've lived in Oxnard, California in 2020, was working for a reentry organization, did a live scan, and here come the same wrongful conviction, and you still bringing it up at the age of 66? Come on, something's wrong with this.
But something positive did happen for all exonerees in Maryland in 2021. The Walter Lomax Act was passed, which meant a new avenue for compensation for Leslie.
They awarded me $577,000 2 years ago. And on July the 4th, they honored me at the Waterfront Festival in Cherry Hill. When I met the comptroller for the state of Maryland, her name is Brooke Lerman. I explained to her, I said, Brooke, I'm tired. All I'm asking them, correct the injustice that's been going on over these years that I've been sending y'all. She's aware of it. She said to me that I need to make an appointment to meet the governor.
And maybe he can't trust them to finally effectively expunge his record, but we really hope that someone finally gets it right.
The lesson of all this, man, that I hope and pray that all other exonerees recognize that, make sure they check about these background histories. Make sure that it's done the way it's supposed to. That means it has to be exonerated from the FBI files also. And that might be something that a lot of exonerees don't know.
So, any calls to action for our audience?
Call for action is for this boy, Marcellus Williams. My blessings for him and prayers for his family.
For those of you who aren't aware, an innocent man named Marcellus Williams is set to be executed on September 24th, 2024, even though he has been excluded from every piece of physical evidence. The current St. Louis prosecuting attorney, Wesley Bell, supports Marcellus's motion to vacate the conviction. Yes, you heard that right. While Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, on the other hand, has gone so far as to try to block recent exculpatory DNA evidence from being even heard in court. Marcellus and the Midwest Innocence Project desperately need our help, and we're going to link action steps in the episode description. And with that, we turn now to my favorite part of the show, where I have the privilege of thanking you again for being here and sharing your story. And now I'm just going to kick back in my chair, close my eyes, and you just share with us any other thoughts you may have.
Look, I hope this governor do what he says. That's it. There's nothing else that I can ask for. I want to be able to live. I'll be 67 in September, man. I want to be able to have peace, not just at night when I lay down and rest, but I want to have peace so that I can enjoy the remainder of my days. I think I deserve that. I know I'm going to have that. You can't never make me whole because of what happened, but you can put me to a point where I don't have to worry no more.
Thank you for listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early and ad-free by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts. I want to thank our production team, Connor Hall and Kathleen Fink, as well as my fellow executive producers, Jeff Kempler, Kevin Wardis, and Jeff Clyburn. The music in this production was supplied by 3-time Oscar-nominated composer Jay Ralph. Be sure to follow us across all social media platforms at Lava for Good and at Wrongful Conviction. You can also follow me on Instagram at It's Jason Flom. Wrongful Conviction is a production of Lava for Good Podcast in association with Signal Company No. 1.
I'm Jess Acevedo, executive producer of the hit Netflix documentary series Dancing for the Devil, the 7M TikTok cult.
And I'm Clea Gray, former member of 7M Films and Shekinah Church.
And we're the host of the new podcast, Forgive Me for I Have Followed. Together, we'll be diving even deeper into the unbelievable stories behind 7M Films and Shekinah Church.
Listen to Forgive Me for I Have Followed on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
For decades, the mafia had New York City in a stranglehold, with law enforcement seemingly powerless to intervene.
It uses terror to extort people.
But the murder of Carmine Galante marked the beginning of the end.
It sent the message that we can prosecute these people.
Listen to Law and Order Criminal Justice System on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Gianna Prudenti.
And I'm Jemaine Jackson-Gadsden. We're the hosts of Let's Talk Offline from LinkedIn News and iHeart Podcasts.
There's a lot to figure out when you're just starting your career. That's where we come in.
Think of us as your work besties you can turn to for advice.
And if we don't know the answer, we bring in people who do, like negotiation expert Maury Tahiri-Poor.
If you start thinking about negotiations as just a conversation, then I think it sort of eases us a little bit.
Listen to Let's Talk Offline on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell, and if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.